Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of A Pod Divided here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. Everything School HQ over there in Tequila, Georgia. My good friend, Philly University of North Georgia alumni, Matt Green, is here. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir. It is good to be back with you on Selection Sunday. Not that this is a college basketball pod, but yeah, big day of the year, I feel like. I think on the radio they were talking about like the biggest days in the sports calendar that like aren't games, and they were putting like Selection Sunday up there, like National Signing Day, those kinds of NFL draft. I feel like Selection Sunday's up there. Everyone loves to see the bracket be unveiled. It's just you don't need to see it. Just like you don't need to watch the NFL draft. You can tune in the next day and see who everyone picks. Same with signing day, but it's like for the diehards, you love it. Signing day is a little different. It used to be a lot more fun than it kind of is in this era.
The first round of the NFL draft and the lottery of the NBA draft is really all that you'll get me to watch live. I didn't watch any part of Selection Sunday. I don't care. Like, I get the list and I'll refresh, and then I'm like, okay, Tennessee's at the 2 spot and Purdue's, and I'll spend my morning going through and seeing matchups and stuff like that. But I'm not an award show guy. I'm not a bracket live show guy. I'm not like those weekly CFP rankings unveilings. There are people that wait around for that and where their team's going to be. That I've never understood. That's not me. I promise. Like, it's going to be right there on Twitter or whatever. Not too long after, you can go have a nice dinner with your wife. You don't need to be sitting waiting for that announcement to happen live on TV. I don't know. It's just not me. I don't know. I feel like a hater, capital H, because I know it's a big day for a lot of folks that, like you said, that love the bracket unveiling and the bracket day. And I'm just like, I watched I had the players on. I'm obviously watching Tennessee baseball over the weekend, top five there too, taking my notes, writing stories, writing stuff every day for the Players Lounge Tennessee. Go subscribe today if you have not already. I don't know, man. I got other things going on. It's not my deal. It's never really been my deal.
I mean, you're watching golf. I mean, like, what is worse than watching golf?
I mean, Scheffler just went back to back at the Players.
Get out of here.
Came back.
I'll give you the NBA draft lottery. It's one of the worst like things to watch, but it's like a 15-minute commitment. It's like they're like in halftime of some game or something, and they're like, oh, let's go to the lottery real quick. So it's like, and that's basically that's telling you who the number one pick's gonna be next year, or who's getting the number one whatever star, Wimby, that sort of Zion sort of thing. So it's definitely a big day like that. Always like the Sunday selection. And during the season, college football, you're a college football guy, sir. If Kirk Herbstreit and the gang just want to get on our televisions on a Tuesday evening, I'm tuning in. Let's talk college football. It's better than anything else they could put on ESPN.
It's just not me, man. I got other things. It's not me. I am for everyone jumping into whatever, but I am going to be authentically myself, Matt Green, and you know me, and that is what I'm going to be. Matt Green, as the episode title alludes to, as we continue our off-season series here, week over week, we're going to hit the top 10 current college football coaches. We did not share before we started going through these notes and compiling our own list here as to where we thought the other might go or who is going to be ranked where. We did a top 25 version a year ago, and we've whittled this down to top 10 this year. So I think we should start with who we had in the top 25 last year before we dive into where we both had the top 10 this year.
Oh man, you want me to read the whole top 25?
Well, what has changed when you're looking at it right now for the good folks who don't have access to our top 25 from a year ago? What do you notice when you're looking at our show sheet here and you're seeing who we have on our selected top 10 list? What are the takeaways from what's changed from a season ago?
Well, the two biggest ones right off the bat is Nick Saban and Jim Harbaugh. Like those right. are both, I think we've had them both at Saban number two. I had Harbaugh 5, you had Harbaugh 4 a year ago. Mm-hmm. So like, obviously there's a guys that moved up this list that didn't actually do more in 2023. It's just a result of two of the best in the game leaving college football. But a lot of guys in our top 10, and maybe we should have gone to top 25 just so we could keep this data going for 2025 and so on. But we both have several guys in our top 10 that weren't even in our top 25 a year ago. Do we just want to get into our top 10?
Let's go ahead and get into our top 10, Matt Green, because I think it's funny. We have a lot of disagreements, except for the fact that our top two are the exact same. And I did not anticipate after one we would have the same number two coach, but let's combine this conversation here. With Nick Saban retiring, I think the biggest winner, it seems like, is Brian Kelly, because Brian Kelly, if the divisions were still intact, I think Brian Kelly would have LSU in a point where you would look at what he's built and what he's built to this point, that it's now his conference or his division, that is, that we would expect Brian Kelly, if he's at LSU for 5 to 7 years, whatever it is, that he wins the division more often than not, and kind of dominates in Nick Saban's wake there. But what do you make of us both putting Kirby at 1 and Brian Kelly at 2 here, sir?
Yeah, that was really a repeat from last year with Saban just bumping out. We both had Kirby, Saban, Brian Kelly 1, 2, 3 a year ago. So yeah, Brian Kelly, I would say LSU definitely underachieved a year ago, just for the simple fact that they had the Heisman Trophy winner and one of the worst defenses in the SEC. But Brian Kelly's just proved year in and year out what he is. And he's one of the best coaches in college football. He feels like he's becoming more polarizing, maybe because we're seeing lists like this and people have him top 2, top 3, and he hasn't won a national championship. But you look around, nobody's won a national championship. It's Kirby Smart. It's Dabo Swinney, and it's Mac Brown, who Mac Brown is not making top 50 lists. Like, we don't even really know that he's the decision maker when you look over at the sideline during North Carolina games. So yeah, he's got that on his resume, but it might as well be ancient history. So there's three current college football coaches that have national championships. So that everyone's kind of on an equal playing field of like, there's no trump card of, he's got the national. Oh shoot. Oh yeah, because Jimbo Fisher. I was about to throw Jimbo Fisher in there, but he's obviously the only thing that was keeping Jimbo in like top 20 discussions, because he does have that national championship. But now there's no one else really like that. But yeah, you look at Kirby Smart right now. Speaking of that, there's not an active coach that has beaten Kirby Smart since 2019.
Wow.
So it's Nick Saban, it's Saban again, it's Dan Mullen in there, Ed Orgeron got, Ed Orgeron, I guess you got to go, no, that's 2019, yeah. And then I think Will Muschamp got him too. So there's not an active coach that's beaten Kirby Smart in the last 5 years, and there's not a coach that's beaten Kirby Smart since he's been at Georgia that is still at their current program. I think if you have to go to other active coaches, it's like Gus Malzahn's in there, Hugh Freeze, back at Ole Miss. Tom Herman, he's active, right?
Yes.
So he's beaten Georgia, but yeah, nobody is still at their same school the first time they beat Kirby Smart. And probably the only time. I don't think anyone's beaten him twice that's active.
Man, maybe that'll change this year. Maybe it will. I don't know. But I think that's the thing is like, there's really no case against Kirby being the best college football coach right now. Like, there's no one on the list, especially with Saban retiring, Jim Harbaugh off. I think Harbaugh probably would have had the best case after this year where you're like, look, I would still take Kirby, but you could at least make the argument that Harbaugh's last 2 years and what he's built with that Michigan team. I mean, it's just, you could have talked yourself into the situation of like, Harbaugh, I mean, I don't think he's the best coach in college football, but I also am not 100% certain he's not. You could at least make the argument,
It'd
I think.
It'd be arguable, sure. But you would just always take Kirby, and it was always, you would always take Kirby over Saban when it came to age, when it came to just the absolute beast he is as a recruiter. Like, and then also this NFL thing that Jim Harbaugh was always flirting with. Like, that's why you would always take Kirby. But yeah, you could make an argument that Jim Harbaugh was just as good, even though he only had the one national championship. What did they have? Two losses the last 3 years total. And two of those, and both of those were in the college football playoffs. So yeah, they were just about doing the same thing that Georgia's done the last 3 years. Georgia just ended up winning championships in two of those.
No, 100%. I also think what's interesting here is like when you, there's usually some sort of like Nick Saban, there was the brain drain, right? Where he just had to replace coordinators and coaches so many times that like, that was something that was starting to catch up to him a little bit. You saw at the end, but with Kirby, like, I just don't know what you pinpoint of like a weakness right now. Cause early on you could say like, maybe it was offensive coaching choices, stuff like that. That evolved, that changed. There is absolutely not a better recruiting staff in college football right now than what Kirby has built in Athens. So you can't go against that. You can't go against the defense. You can't go against the development. So it's not only he's recruiting at an elite level, he's also putting guys in the NFL and developing dudes at an elite level. He's now getting elite quarterback play at the university with Carson Beck, who could be the number one overall pick in the 2025 NFL draft. Also could be James Pierce. Shout out to Tennessee's Leo James Pierce. But I think it's just really hard to find something that you can pinpoint. Cause I mean, he loses some big names this offseason, and guess what? He hires really well to replace those guys. So it's just, I don't really know where the, you know, it, when you're thinking about the Death Star, like where that little spot, if the Rebel Alliance somewhere in the SEC is trying to find that little gap, that little weakness, to take it down. I don't see it with Kirby and with what he's built in Athens anytime soon.
For sure. Because honestly, and the criticisms were probably never really legitimate either. Like he was criticized like in year three, like he can't develop players. Like, can you remember that was an actual narrative that was out there about talent development. And it was like his first full class isn't even seniors yet. Like when that was a narrative, and then they go break the record for most guys drafted and break the 2 year record for guys drafted in a 2 year period. So yeah, it's, we've seen them now on the offensive side of the ball. Like they're just humming on all cylinders. So it's crazy to think that there only a couple years ago, there was people who legitimately thought Dan Mullen was a better head coach than Kirby Smart. And now we're here like, oh yeah, it's no debate. He's clearly the best coach in the entire sport.
I will say on the other side of things, as we're talking about Brian Kelly and Kirby, there is some reason for hesitation, I think, with Brian Kelly. I think there is it's fair to have one particular gripe with him. And it's the James Franklin conversation, Matt Green. James Franklin's won a lot of football games in his college coaching career. I think there's a lot of parallels between James Franklin and Brian Kelly to this point in their head coaching careers. James Franklin won big at Vanderbilt, a level that no one else has touched. Brian Kelly, you can make the case over the amount of time he was at Notre Dame, which was a hard job, recruiting, academics, everything else, the talent in the state of Indiana. He was able to maximize.
Cincinnati, too.
Right, in Cincinnati. He has been able to consistently win and build winners at a lot of different kinds of spots, hard spots. But he's also won at a good level at the Power 2. So James Franklin has won 10 games multiple times. He hasn't won the Big Ten yet. But guess what? Brian Kelly has not won the LSU or won the SEC yet at LSU. He has two back-to-back double-digit win seasons. That is something James Franklin can say a lot in Happy Valley. Like, he's still putting out, like, he's recruiting extremely well at Penn State. They're somewhere in that top 10, top 15 most years. He's doing all the right things. He hires well. He has a lot of NFL guys come out of his scheme. Like, I think there is something to Brian Kelly. He's 0-2 in the college football playoff to this point. I don't know. I think maybe the bet, he's 283-103-2 all time as a head coach. I think the best thing, though, for Brian Kelly, if you're going to, like, you and I obviously are going to defend him because we have him at number two on our list. I think the best argument for Brian Kelly being the second best coach in college football is he's made stabilizing Notre Dame and LSU look very easy. That he just walks in and makes two extremely difficult jobs, very passionate fan bases, very different kind of jobs, but makes them both contenders year in, year out, and is able to just calm the storms a little bit where it's just, he's made it all normal. Like, LSU is just a normal, strong operation. And we've seen how hard LSU is to manage year in, year out. We've seen what Notre Dame was before Brian Kelly. And it's not an easy job. He made it look easy at Notre Dame for years. I don't know. I think that's the best thing about Brian Kelly is, like, say what you want about the personality, this, that, and the other. He makes these big time jobs with all kinds of stuff that fans don't understand about what goes into being the head coach at these two universities. He makes it look easy and wins big there. Like, he has won a title, but he has built a strong, sustainable model at two big time locations and has never really faltered.
Yeah. And we obviously have to keep going further down our list, but James Franklin didn't make either of our top 10.
Yeah.
So why, for so many similarities, why do you think James Franklin's not on either top 10?
I think it's the time he's been at Penn State. I think Brian Kelly would slip. So if Brian Kelly's at LSU, let's say for 6-7 years, and he doesn't win a national title, but he wins 9 or 10 games most years, what are we thinking about Brian Kelly? Is he still in that top two? Is he now sliding down a little bit?
It's going to be completely different now because it's actually going to be, you know, with this 12-team playoff,
right,
or 14, whatever we're doing, like, that third best team in the SEC, like, consistently be in the third best team in the Big Ten, that's going to carry a lot more weight than it did.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh yeah, really good season. You haven't won anything, the Twitter trolls will say. But yeah, so I think I honestly judge Brian Kelly pretty much still only on what he did at Notre Dame. Because if I was looking at our rankings, like, I'd have Saban, I'd have Harbaugh still ahead of him. I think it's more of an indictment on kind of not that there's no good college football coaches out there, but there's not many guys with just that are in an institution in the sport anymore. You know, you look around at guys that just been here for decades and, oh, this guy's a great all time. It's like, there's just not many of those around right now. So I think Brian Kelly is pretty much the best coach that's yet to win a national championship.
I agree. And I think James Franklin is somewhere in that top five if he went to national title at Penn State. I just think he's been at Penn State so long that it's just kind of, he needs a year. He needs Drew Aller to pop. He needs that breakthrough year to get him back in that conversation.
I jumped off the bandwagon. So maybe this will be the year where they get it done. Maybe I was waiting it down. But I thought 23 was the year.
Well, let's go to Kalen DeBoer. I have Kalen at 3. You have Ryan Day at 3. We'll get into Ryan Day in a second because I don't have Ryan Day on my list at all.
So let's start with that.
Okay.
How do you leave Ryan Day off the top 10?
So it's not, I got to be careful here. I mean, the born on third base comments were a lot. They were really classic. Sports hot.
All time trash talk.
They were all time trash talk. He's lost 3 straight to Michigan. His only real talent rival year over year in the Big Ten. I think his performance, the best, the height of the Ryan Day tenure thus far in Columbus is what he did against Georgia in the Sugar Bowl 2 years ago, putting it like really should have won that game, all things considered. But
they were in position.
Like they little things went.
Georgia, we got the result we needed. That okay. should have happened. It was
what I'm saying result. Is like you play that whatever you play the second half 100 times. Ohio State probably wins
winnable
that
game without a doubt. Yeah.
That being said, I just what does he want? Like the recruiting operation is so strong. He hires well. He's adjust well. So like bringing in Knowles to run the defense has been big. Their defense was elite last year. So I think he's a good Chip Kelly is a great hire, but he also promoted from within with Brian Hartline last year. And that didn't go well. Obviously the offense had a lot of trouble. Kyle McCord transfers out. It's a little rocky right now in Ohio State. A lot of pressure going into this year. We'll see what Will Howard is. You brought in a bunch of talent. You're going to have a great Tua Tagovailoa with Trevion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins. But when I think about the rest of the names in this list, I don't know what Ryan Day would be like at some of these other schools based on what we've seen thus far at Ohio State. That I plugged some of these guys in, like Kalen DeBoer, I think would be better at Ohio State than Ryan Day to this point. I think Brian Kelly would be better than Ryan Day at Ohio State at this point. I think Dan Lanning would be an upgrade. I think Jeff Brohm, who got Louisville to the ACC title game year one, just brings in Jack Plummer, multi-transfer guy, and he just wills Louisville immediately to the ACC title game in his first year. The guy just wins wherever he goes and has an electric offense wherever he goes. It's just my list. I don't think Ryan Day's a bad coach. I just think he's somewhere in that top 20 to 10. I don't know. I just don't think he has shown enough to me with the resources that Ohio State has, that he has put together the losing streak to Michigan, what the offense looked like last year. I don't know. I don't think he right now fits in that top 10. The sport is actually, people are panicking about where the coaches are going and the elite coaches with Saban retiring, this, that, and the other. But there's a lot of elite coaches in the sport right now. And I just, part of what I thought about going into this list is like going into 2024, if I had unlimited resources and I could hire any coach across the country, where am I going or who do I feel the best about? He doesn't make my list right now. Like he doesn't make the top 10. That is, he's somewhere in the 11 to 20 range. But for me, he's just not in the top 10. They could change this year. They could win the national title and he's right back in there.
No. And I think the born on third base comments, I think like, while it's like, I understand where you're going with that. It's like, there's definitely some truth to it. At some point it's like, it's this guy's program. Like he's been the head coach since 2019. Like obviously Urban Meyer built a juggernaut, but like he has sustained the program. Like that 2019 team, you know, like as good as that LSU team was, like that Ohio State team was every bit as dominant in the regular season. They lost a college football playoff game to Clemson. Like he's 56-8. Like half of his losses in his career are in the college football playoff. Like, you look at since he took over at Ohio State, their final AP ranking, number 3, number 2, number 6, number 4. And this was his worst year since he's been there in 2023, finished number 10. So, you know, and they've lost and they lost the bowl game, which, you know, means whatever in today's college football. So I don't know. I just look at Ryan Day and like Ohio State has been the model, has been one of the most consistent programs in the country. Like, he's judged at just win a national championship or failure. And there's only about two or three other guys in the entire sport that have been judged that way. Kirby Smart was one of them that you haven't won anything. It's like, no, he's won everything but a national championship. Like Ryan Day has won the Big Ten. He's obviously lost to Michigan 3 years in a row, but he's gotten to the college football playoff. He's gotten to the national championship game. So it's not like this guy is just fraudulent and, you know, every time.
No, let me be clear. I'm not saying he's fraudulent or anything. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying when you lose to your arch rival 3 straight years, when you're 1-3 in the college football playoff, when you have the talent advantage that Ohio State has week in, week out, with the kind of schedule that Ohio State really does play in the regular season, week in, week out, I just, what are the signature wins to this point for Ryan Day at Ohio State? Like, what do you look towards that you're like, I mean, I think the best thing maybe is development on offense. Like, Marvin Harrison, obviously top five guy this upcoming draft. CJ Stroud looks like a dude at the NFL level. So there have been some hits there.
A bunch of big time draft. Chase Young was a big time draft pick. Like, a bunch of guys like that.
Well, Young wasn't, I don't think, a Ryan Day guy. I think it was Urban. But
Maybe not recruited by, but yeah, because he was on that 2019 team.
I don't know. It's fine. I'm okay if you put Ryan Day in the top 10. Like, it's not something I'm just ardently opposed to. I just think for me right now in 2024, I just kind of need, this is a big year for Ryan Day. Now that Jim Harbaugh's out at Michigan, you have an opportunity. I think you're going to be right up there. You're favored with Oregon atop the conference. It's just, hey, like, this is a big year. This is a big year.
This is definitely a massive year. Like, I think this is, I mean, unless they lose in the national championship to Georgia, I think anything else is going to, like, negatively impact the everyone's decision, like, opinion of Ryan Day. I think, like, not saying that Georgia, like, they're just, oh, they lost to Georgia, they'll be happy with that. But that's, like, the one thing. It's like, if they go undefeated and lose to Georgia in the national championship, they didn't underachieve or anything. They won their conference. They beat Michigan, all that. They just didn't win the national championship. But, you know, with how the guys are judged. And I think the playoff, that's like what we've talked before. I think that's going to be the big positive that's going to come from the playoff, is you can win three college ball playoff games, two college ball playoff games, and your fans feel a lot better. It's not a sit at home in December and, oh, we haven't won anything. And so, you know, maybe you can have a disappointing season, but a couple good college football playoff wins can ease the tension, ease the pain.
Absolutely. On the flip side, I have Kalen DeBoer at 3 and you have Kalen DeBoer at 4. I don't think there's any way you can have Kalen DeBoer anywhere outside of anybody's top 5 right now. I think there's been a lot of reaction to Kalen DeBoer's hire at Alabama. Some people who are like, the dynasty is dead, this and the other. It's just going to be different. I look at it as, like, I don't think recruiting's falling off cliff. I don't think it's a Brian Harsin situation, because I think there's some people who really have just gone way too far about that. It's like, that's not what's happening here. Kalen DeBoer is an elite offensive mind.
He's not Nick Saban, so it's going to be most likely not as good.
I mean, it's not even most likely. Like, he's not going to be as good as Nick Saban, because that's impossible. I genuinely think it's impossible in the modern college football game, especially with the expanded playoff, with divisions going away, this, that, and the other, the conference expanding, bringing in Texas and Oklahoma. I think it's literally impossible to be as good as Nick Saban at Alabama going forward. That being said, he is an elite college football coach. He just played in the national championship game at Washington, was right there, pushed Michigan a little bit early. It doesn't matter where he goes. And there's another coach like this where we're going to get to him in a second, because I'm very curious about where you think about him, because I don't think he's on your top 10. But Kalen DeBoer is going to figure it out. He hires well. He kept some Alabama guys. He gets it. He kept, like, guys like Freddie Roach and Gillespie at running backs coach. Like, he did not just bring in all of his own guys, this, that, and the other. He lost some key ones with Ryan Grubb, ended up in Seattle, who he's been with forever. But Nick Sheridan's been with him for a long time. He'll be fine as the offensive coordinator. The guy wins at an unbelievable clip. And if you're talking about starting any program or bringing in anybody that you're just like, hey, I want to go win 10-11 games right out of the gate here, who can I go get? Kalen DeBoer is on your top 3 list, because this is an offense-driven sport, and Kalen DeBoer is one of the two best offensive minds in the sport right now. And I just don't know how you can keep Kalen DeBoer. Like, that's where it's just gone way too far in terms of how Alabama's looked at the moment. It's just, will it be as dominant, especially defensively? Probably not. But Kane won't. I think he pronounced it Womack. I don't think it's Womack. from an interview I heard, I think it's actually not Womack. But that's a great hire. Like, you pull him, you pull Maurice Linguist from Buffalo, two sitting head coaches, G5 head coaches, and your defensive staff. Like, they're going to be fine. They're still going to be a very good football program. And they might win 10-11 games still this year. Now, I don't know. That comes down to how we both feel about Jalen Milroe and stuff like that. But by and large, I just don't see how you can not look at Kalen DeBoer right now in the sport as not as one of the three best coaches active.
Yeah, he's right up there for sure. I mean, it's, you know, you never know, because most people would have said Bear Bryant. No one can ever eclipse what Bear Bryant did at Alabama, and Nick Saban did that. So,
but not right after. There was a blip in between. It never follows. It never goes one after the
most
other.
Most likely, but Nick Saban is leaving a program a lot better than most will. So, if there was ever a time someone could keep the success going,
well, I will say, you know, it's sneaky. I say that Mark Richt to Kirby, like Mark Richt all time wins, like that kind of jump from Richt to Kirby. I mean, that's an overlooked just amount of winning between the two. Cause I think Kirby's won so much that people have now forgotten where Mark Richt is all time in college football wins. Have you looked at it? He's somewhere way closer to the top than you would have guessed.
Yeah, it's definitely an underrated just nailing the hire back to back. Yeah, Richt was like what? It was like 150,
171 right at 150 and 64.
Win. Was that
171 and 64?
That's total, right? That's not.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying though. As a all-time coach, like he's 171, 64. Like that's right up there. All-time wins.
I know Vince Dooley was he was over 200 wins, mm-hmm. but he also coached a lot longer at Georgia. I think winning percentage wise, Richt probably was better than Dooley, but never won a national championship, obviously. But yeah, you just look. Kalen DeBoer has won everywhere he's been. I feel like him and Dan Lanning are like kind of the rising stars, and I have Dan Lanning right there at five, because since he's 0-3 against Kalen DeBoer, you can't put him ahead of DeBoer.
No.
Where do you have
number five? I have Steve Sarkisian, who you don't have all the way down till nine, and then you have Dan Lanning at six. So what would you rather get into? Why you have Sark so far down?
No,
your
that's
list?
You. I have Lanning at five. You have Lanning at six.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Did I say it backwards?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I have Lanning at six. You have Lanning at five. So let's talk Lanning for a second. Lanning has won double-digit games his first 2 years at Oregon. I think Lanning has the potential to be number two on this list in the next 2 years. Would you agree with that?
Definitely. I think the arrow is definitely pointed up for Lanning.
10.5 wins over under. Could win the Big Ten year one, moving into the conference. Recruited exceptionally well. Likeable dude. Hires well. That being said, he was 0-2 against Kalen DeBoer last year. He doesn't really have a signature win to this point at Oregon. There's just something about where we can put him at this point where he's just kind of a victim of the quick emergence at Oregon. He was probably the hardest for me to pick, because it's like obvious that he is a future star in this industry, but I couldn't figure it out on where to put him, because it's just so early, you know, like I'm really just, that was my issue with Lanning. It's just, it's hard to place him right now.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that you basically had him as high as I did, because I think both of our lists are kind of a combination of like, what have you done? And like, who would I want? You know? And I think you're looking at Dan Lanning right now. What is he, like 39 years old? He's like, I don't even think he's 40. Like, you just see a young guy. He was obviously coming up through Nick Saban, through Kirby Smart. Like, that's the pedigree you want, and he's already proven it in 2 years as a head coach. It seemed, and backed by Oregon and Nike and everything they got going on, it's like Dan Lanning is just, he's one of the hotter coaches out there right now. But can he beat Kalen DeBoer? Maybe he won't have to. Maybe he can get through the Big Ten without having to face DeBoer anymore. His kryptonite.
Or Harbaugh.
He's obviously made some terrible fourth down decisions. He's got that on his back right now.
But hey, Kirby had a learning curve as a head coach too early on. Josh Heupel had a learning curve. Heupel was very, very aggressive, going for it a lot more on fourth. He was I was talking to Brent Humms on VolQuest this week about it, where Heupel definitely adapted in year three and was more, he played field position a lot more this past year than he did his first 2 years. And I think it's just part of it's learning on the job, man. Like, I think part of it's trial and error, and you have to give these coaches time to figure stuff out and deal with the ups and downs of the profession and what it means to build a coach. But I think the bigger thing is I don't know how you have Sark so low, because Sark right now, I mean, when we talk about who could be at that top two, who could replace Kelly, for me, you could make the argument Sark's number two right now. Like Sark I have at five. You could put Sark all the way up at number two for me, Matt Green.
No, and that's definitely true, but I feel like Sark's got a, he's got a big body of work, and it's yeah. not the greatest thing ever. Like, he wasn't great at USC. He wasn't great at Washington. Now at Texas, they look like, you know, better than they've ever been, than a program's ever been. But it's like, let's not keep in mind that team that almost beat Alabama in 2022, like that team went 8-5. Like, yeah, Quinn Ewers missed a couple games here and there, but like, that was year two at Texas. It's, you know, we don't have to, like, you know, put huge pressure on him. Last year was a great year, but coming to the SEC, like, I don't know what to expect from Sarkisian. He's definitely the one that's got the biggest, like, potential, like, upgrade on my list. Like, he could go into the top two or three next year, depending on what he does. But, like, it's going to be a different beast, Texas playing in the SEC next year. So I think that'll go a long way, but you can't ignore kind of just that he's been a coach for like about a decade, when some of these guys haven't been as coach of as long and have significantly higher winning percentage.
That's true. But I mean, the guy broke through. He was in the College Football Final Four here. He's obviously recruited extremely well. True. Quinn Ewers has been a success. You get Arch Manning. I said on my list when I was thinking about this, he's just at the perfect spot of what he brings to the table. Like, there's just a lot of flash. He has the NFL experience. He was an underrated offensive coordinator with the Falcons, I think. He's obviously won 12 games now at Texas. Goes 8-5, like you said, the year prior. But people forget, like, he won 9 games his first year at USC. And you talk about the Washington time. They got better every single year. His last year, he went 8-4. And Washington wasn't the Washington that Chris Peterson walked into or that Kalen DeBoer walked into. This was a tough situation. Like, Washington was up. They were in bad shape when Sark took over the Washington Huskies. And it took some time to get them back.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Washington was never like a terrible team, though, were they?
Hold on.
It's like the Jake Locker era, somewhere around there.
I mean, you're thinking, what's his name? Ty Willingham. Who was 2008?
I mean, they weren't good.
Yeah, Ty Willingham. So they were 0-9 and 0-12 the previous year. Sark.
They had an 0-12 year, Washington?
Do you see what I'm saying? When we talk about Sark and Washington, people don't remember. Sark rejuvenated the Huskies. He built that back up that Chris Peterson then took over and won. And Chris Peterson's obviously an elite coach too. But like, Sark is undervalued in his what he's built, and USC's we've seen over the years, like, that's a mess, and he won 9 games. Like, who cares? And then he leaves the stuff that happened the year after, whatever. Sark is an elite college football coach, and I think he's just an elite coach in general. But that's what I'm saying. See, you forget that Washington
was I in these years. So Washington 2004 went 1-10, 2005 2-9, 2006 5-7, 4-9, and then 2008 0-12.
Yeah,
that's insane.
I told you. It doesn't feel like it because we know them. Sark literally resurrected the Washington Huskies football.
I'll give you that.
I think I just flipped. An opinion.
No, I'll give you the Washington success for sure. But I mean, still, he at USC, you know, he was the golden child, you know, and he just, I don't know, he obviously had his whole substance abuse situation going on there, but Texas is not exactly a, you know, a rebuild. Like, they weren't great before he got there, but
have they ever been this tough? Have they ever been this good defensively? Like, he's hired extremely well. Like, that defense has been nasty the last 2 years. Have we ever seen
one
Texas
good season
this
in 3 years? It's one good team in 3 years. It's like, it is the year three. So, you know, their arrow is definitely pointed up, but, you know, a 3 or 4 loss season next year. What do we think about Sarkisian? They probably will probably think they're going to be preseason top 5, right? Like, maybe preseason number 3. Like, they're right
this
there,
year?
Right? With, yeah, with Georgia and Ohio State.
Yeah, they
like,
should
Texas
be top
3.
Be
right up there. So, yeah, I think this year will go a long way. And 9's respectable. I got him right up there. Where'd you have him at 5 or
5,
6?
Yeah. I think I am 5, yeah.
So, yeah, you didn't have DeBoer, Sarkisian, or Lanning ranked in your top 25 a year ago. I didn't have DeBoer or Lanning in my top 25. Now, got him way up there. All right, so let's keep it going. I got Luke Fickell at 6.
Not on my list.
10. He's a tough one to rank. Because obviously we don't know what he's done at Wisconsin yet, but I trust Luke Fickell. I think he's going to, I just trust the floor that he's going to have a program at. So we'll see. We'll definitely have more to work with. It's hard to, you know, his history at Ohio State, like, you know, what can you really make of that? You know? So I think Luke Fickell's just a guy that we'll see. I'm higher on than you, definitely.
Luke Fickell, who's the, like, what's the analogy for him? Like, he's solid. He obviously got Cincinnati to the CFP heights that they had not reached to that point. He had a weird hire. Like, they're running the air raid now in Wisconsin. He brought that in. Tanner Mordecai didn't go well last year. We'll see if Tyler Van Dyke is better this year for the Badgers. He's solid. I just don't think he's a top 10 coach. I think he's somewhere in that top 20. Like, if you told me he was like the 14th best, I think I would be okay with that. I just don't think he's going to be the elite of the elites. I'll never look at Luke Fickell as like, yeah, I don't know.
I just feel like he should be at Notre Dame right now. Like, he just seems like he would just fit Notre Dame. Like, when Brian Kelly left, like, he just seemed like maybe make a career off that, just following in Brian Kelly's wake, if you will. But we'll keep it moving. Controversial one here.
Okay.
Because Dabo Swinney, when you talk about would you take him, like, no one likes Dabo Swinney. So, like, I got to keep moving him down.
People like Dabo.
I mean, I think he's the most disliked coach in college football, though, right?
I think he's,
like, the most polarizing, like, opinion. Like, there's just not that many big characters that people dislike. Like, Kirby Smart.
I think people dislike
coaching
Saban more than Dabo. I think Dabo just, I think Dabo means well. I think Dabo's just cringy. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think everyone just looks at him as you're cringy. I don't know cringy teacher, honestly. Like, who you're just like, he's kind of like a cringy U.S. history teacher in high school. And you're like, he's harmless. He means well. Good recruiter. A lot. The guys who play for him love him. The people who play in the Clemson culture love the Clemson culture. He's obviously built something really strong there. I mean, you can reasonable minds can disagree with what Dabo wants and like where Dabo sees college football going, this and the other. But I don't think people actually like hate Dabo. I don't know. There's just not a lot to hate about him. You know what I mean? I don't know.
I think you just think about who the hateable coaches are in college football. Like, I mean, you just have to have a certain level of success to be hated.
Yeah.
Him and Kirby Smart are the only ones that have 2 championships. And Kirby Smart doesn't really feel like a very hated coach, you know? Like,
I think the 2 biggest hated coaches just left. Harbaugh and
exactly
Saban.
So I think that's a big part of it. So I think Dabo's there. I think he's probably the most disliked. Ryan Day, I think a lot of people dislike. But you know, there's a lot of young up and coming coaches that a lot of people just, you know, don't really have negative things to say about. But Dabo Swinney, his resume, obviously he's won 80% of his games at Clemson, 2 national championships, however many playoffs they made in a row. It was like 8 playoffs in a row. But the coach you're getting in 2024 needs to be playing the sport by the rules in 2024. And based on that currently, like Dabo Swinney, he should be number two on this list, you know, but based on like how he currently approaches the sport, you have to dock him a little bit. And I clearly you docked him more than I did. I bring him out of the top 10, but I think that's why you have to have him so much lower than guys that he has a better resume than, because the way the sport is currently built, he's not putting his program in the best position to win national championships.
And that's the reason is I don't think this is going to end well with Dabo at Clemson in terms of just where NIL, where the sport's going. Like the transfer portal, the reluctance to use it. I think he's been a little bit too loyal with his coordinators. You saw that the last couple of years on the offensive side of the ball, especially. Now I kind of wonder, it's like when you don't have the two back-to-back all-time great college quarterbacks with Deshaun and Trevor Lawrence, things have looked a little bit different. At Clemson, you're not recruiting at the top 10 level anymore. The coaches I have on this list, on my list, that is, like, I don't think you could say, like, yeah, sign me up for Dabo's version of college football to run my program in 2024. In terms of the top 10, like, a lot of programs should absolutely be banging on the door to bring in Dabo Swinney to their university. But in terms of the coaches that I have in front of him right now, it's 2024 and this list is built off that. I can't put Dabo right now in that list of like current top 10 guys. Like I think some of these other coaches that I have on this list, I think are more equipped. Like some people might scoff that I have Josh Heupel in this top 10 list and not Dabo. I'm like, Heupel beat Dabo and he's out recruiting Dabo. He has a more sustainable model as an offensive mind. Like I don't like Heupel's. I mean, he's won 19 games, or let's see, no, 20 games his last 2 years at Tennessee. Number one offense the year prior. Like, it's trending up. Like, I don't see how you could sell me on Dabo over Heupel in 2024. But it's just little things like that. I don't know. I think Dabo is, like, the second best coach of the 21st century in college football. I think you could sell me on that. But I think in terms of just this 1 year alone and starting here, I don't think you can put Dabo Swinney on the list.
Yeah, I can understand that, and I got him down at seven. That felt low, but yeah, you have him outside of your top 10. So
can you explain to me how you don't have Jeff Brohm? Because I have Jeff Brohm at seven. Make the case of why Jeff Brohm, Louisville head coach, is not a top 10 coach right now in the sport.
I want you to make the case why he is a top 10 head coach in the sport. He went from not ranked a year ago on your list all the way to seven.
Well, we saw what Purdue was this past year without Jeff Brohm. Jeff Brohm immediately goes into Louisville. Like I said, he brings in Jack Plummer, who he has experience with, and proceeds to win the win whatever division they were in. I don't even remember which side the Louisville was in this past year. Whatever. They're in the ACC.
You don't know that they're in the Coastal?
Yeah, sure. There you go. And they go and play at Florida State and play Florida State close. It's year one. Jeff Brohm has a great offense. He wins everywhere he goes. Like, they're recruiting well. He hires well to this point. So you win 10 games right out of the gate. He won 30 games in 3 years at Western Kentucky. 12-2 1 year, 10-3 the next. You go to Purdue, 9-4, 8-5 his last 2 years. 10-4. Like, he's just flirting with 10 wins every year his last 3 years. I just think when I look around college football right now, if I'm thinking, because again, you have to keep in mind, in my opinion, this is an offense first sport, and it's a lot easier for programs to get off the ground when you have an offensive guy. Like, yeah, it's great to have the Kirby's of the world and stuff like that, but like, it's just easier to get good fast when you have good offensive minds year over year leading your program. It's just easier to jumpstart things, in my opinion. So Jeff Brohm, I just think you drop him into a lot of these different places. I think Jeff Brohm would win double-digit games at a lot of programs. Like, I think it's really hard for me to see a situation where Jeff Brohm does not succeed at just about every stop where you could drop him in. I think he's one of the 10 best coaches. I think he's just... He's just bus proof to me.
I think he only knows how to win in the western part of the state of Kentucky.
Mm.
And he has to be close to the Ohio River. I'll put it that way. No, obviously at Purdue, they were pretty good. Going back to his time, Western Kentucky, they were big time. Jeff Brohm is a big time coach. I also just, I feel like that 2023 version of Louisville, like we all knew their schedule was weak. Like, and that was going to be a big part of their success. So we'll see how he follows it up in year two at Louisville. Like he could be a guy that jumps into the top, you know, 10, top 15, but I think he's still got a ways to go to jump into my top 10, I should say. Like, I think he's a good coach, but a lot more proven names on the list.
Okay.
No disrespect out there to Brohm, though.
My number eight and your number eight, I think we can combine these. Because I think these two might just be the two most underrated in the sport right now. You have Kyle Whittingham at your number eight, and I have Chris Kleiman at my number eight. You go first. Why is Kyle Whittingham in your top 10?
I think he was one of the few that I think I had him at number eight a year ago. I think you actually had him at number eight. You had him at number seven a year ago. Fell out of your top 10 this year. You weren't impressed with
he might be at 11
with,
for me.
With their no quarterback offense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this was a terrible season for them, really, in 2023. And they go, what would they go, 8-5? It's like
no Cam Rising, though, all year.
Yeah, exactly. It's like they've just been a model program. And what has he been there, almost 20 years now? Mm-hmm. I feel like he's consistently the most underrated coach in college football. And it's hard to know where to rank a guy like him because they're not competing for national championships. You know, maybe now in this 12-team playoff, they can win a playoff game here or there and kind of solidify their reputation a little bit more. Like they beat Florida. Like that's a big time brand win on the national stage, but we all know how bad Florida was a year ago. So, you know, I think Utah has just been a super consistent program, and Whittingham, he's just there year after year. People pick the sexy new toys in USC and Oregon and Washington, and year in, year out, Utah is right up there with the contenders in the Pac-12. Well, they were with the contenders in the Pac-12. Going to the Big 12, I would say they should be one of the perennial favorites year in and year out.
No, I don't disagree. And that's why I think he is in the top 10, because I think they're the favorites to win the Big 12 this year, especially Cam Rising's last year there and the amount of talent they're bringing back. I think he absolutely, you could sell me he's top 10 right now, and I would be okay with it. The reason
you could also convince me that Cam Rising is never going to leave college.
It's also
possible. I'm not convinced that he's ever going to leave.
I think the Cover Three guys have always joked that that's the last thing that comes down the pike. That because you really can't tell a kid he has to leave. Like if he wants to keep taking classes at college, like why would you not go to court on that front? Like if you don't want to go pro or get a real job, and there's a college willing to
get my third degree.
Yeah, like you can get 7 degrees if you want to. Like there actually should really not be a reason to limit a JT Daniels from being in college for 18 years. Like if he keeps getting checks to go play quarterback at UTEP at age 32, go do it. Like there should not actually be a reason to stop them. So I do wonder if that ever happens in court, but that's a story for another day. Chris Kleiman is 111-37. Matt Green, I think he's like Kalen DeBoer without the offensive firepower. Like their offense is steady Eddie. Colin Klein's obviously been a great right-hand man for him in the Little Apple. They win the Big 12 last year. They beat the team that played in the national title, TCU, in a great game. He wins everywhere he goes. Like they're the co-favorites in the Big 12 with Utah this year. He's just kind of overlooked to me because it's a run first. It's not the most fun. I think Avery Johnson's their new 4-star quarterback who played in the bowl game for them. He should be good. Will Howard, obviously good for them beforehand. 111-37. I just think in today's like just high bar, I think Chris Kleiman's just kind of overlooked here because he's won at least 8 wins every year at Kansas State outside of the COVID year. He went 69-6 at North Dakota State. I just feel like if you put him at a bigger school, I think there's some DeBoer stuff there where I just think people will be like, oh, I don't know how this is going to translate. And then lo and behold, he's like 31-6 at the big time power school with the NIL budget, this, that, the other, and the resources that he hasn't had at this point. I just think Chris Kleiman, if he ever wants to make that final big leap to like a, I don't know, Oklahoma Like if you put Chris Klieman at Oklahoma, or you put Chris Klieman at, I don't know, like
Texas A&M or something.
Texas A&M, it'd be a great one. I mean, I think the sky is the limit. Like, I think it wouldn't be it wouldn't get the fan base fired up, but I could see Chris Klieman winning, getting to a national title game with bigger resources and a bigger opportunity. So I just think Chris Klieman has proven that he is just one of the best winners in the sport. And I think he's somewhere in that top 10, not in the top five, but I think him and Kyle Whittingham are just going to be overachievers and just guys that you can plug into just about any program. And I think they'd have a lot of success.
Yeah, I like that. Klieman's definitely an underrated guy as well. So I had Sarkisian at 9. We've already gotten into him. We didn't really talk about Norvell, did we?
Well, hold on. We're going to get to Norvell because my Norvell is number 4, and we'll get to this one because you have Norvell at 10. We'll end with Norvell. Let's get into this one because I'm going to go ahead and guess you're not going to agree with my Josh Heupel at number 9. Matt Green, if you were to push back on why I have Josh Heupel as one of the 10 best college football coaches in the sport right now, what would you say?
If I were to push back against Heupel?
Yes, being in the top 10 right now.
I would say that, what, he's had 4 years at Tennessee now? 3 years at Tennessee and one good season. A fine year one, whatever, up and down. But year three, I'd say, was disappointing. So I think the jury is just kind of still out on Josh Heupel. I think he's, I think he's proven he's one of the better offensive minds in college football, but like Tennessee's offense was not very good a year ago, so they got to get back to doing what they do well. But I think there's a few guys that if I'm going offensively, I put ahead of Josh Heupel. Like I might put Hugh Freeze ahead of Josh Heupel. But I'm definitely putting Lane Kiffin. I'm definitely putting Lane Kiffin ahead of Josh Heupel.
Lane, I could listen to. Lane also has a lot of top 10 potential after this year. Ole Miss might just go ahead and be like the second best team in the conference this year. I could listen to Lane. He beat Heupel 3 years ago, but it was year one of the Heupel experience, and it came down to the last play, Milton running out of bounds and all that. But how that goes, if they played 2 years ago with Hooker, who knows on that front. And if they played this year, I'd be really, really curious what that looked like with the firepower on both sides. That would be a lot of fun if they were getting a rematch this year, even if it was in Oxford. But here's the thing about Heupel. His first 2 years at UCF, he won 12 games or 22 games, 4 losses. The people pointed to COVID. It's like he got worse every year. It's like, well, no, that's part of the cycle of a program. It's like you have good program. You cycle guys in. Like that's how people move on. And there's like an up and down. Like it's not like Alabama.
You can't always find a pattern in 3 year sample size.
No. And COVID was last year. So it's like, just throw out the COVID. Like he was 6-4 in 2020, like whatever. Then he gets to Tennessee. He figures it out with Hendon Hooker, obviously, and the rest is history. But he's recruiting at a top 10 level right now. He is hiring well. He hired well on defense. The defense has been unbelievable against the run his past 2 years. He hires extremely well on offense. He just landed the number one quarterback in the country in Nico Iamaleava. He landed the number two, number three, depending on who you look at, maybe number one by the end of his senior year in George McIntyre out of Tennessee as well. He's right there in terms of, he had the number one scoring offense last year. He won 9 games. When you talk about underachieving this past year, I think winning 9 games with the limitations of what we saw and the injuries and just the turnover from the year prior, I think Heupel showed that he can win in a multitude of ways because this was a run first team. Jalen Wright's going to be the first running back taken most likely in the NFL draft this spring. He brings in guys. The talent evaluators at Tennessee is elite. James Pierce might go number one overall next year off the edge. He's a big find, 4-star out of North Carolina. You bring in Jordan Ross, 5-star out of Alabama. His recruiting acumen is strong. People are worried about it. The offense, we know when you have the quarterback like Nico, the quarterback like Hendon, quarterback like Dylan Gabriel, Mackenzie Milton, this is going to be a top 5 scoring offense. Like this is going to be one of the most difficult offenses.
But we don't even know what Nico is yet.
I mean, at this point,
how can we just talk like it's just a given, like what Nico's going to be when he started one game in his career so far?
He looked pretty good, man.
That's
I think
the
Nico's
going to
be pretty darn good.
It might be a little different. Like if there was like Sarkisian, if it was that trajectory in 3 years, where if it was the 7-6 and then the 8-5 and then the 11-2, is that what they were in 20? Was it 11-2? 12-2
or 12-2?
12-2. Yeah. In 2022. Mm-hmm. So if it was like progression, I might feel a little different. Like I know the arrow is pointed up with the taking a step back last year. And, you know, I warned people it's a common thing that after the year two breakthrough season to kind of take a step back in year three. So that's not abnormal. But I don't feel like everything, if it was year four for Heupel with what he's been so far, and it felt like everything is kind of aligning for year four to be like their preseason top five or something like that, I might feel a little different, but I don't necessarily feel like Tennessee is definitely going to be better next year than they were last year.
Oh, wow. I definitely think they're going to be better. I think the 9.5 alone, there's a lot of optimism there. I think the defense is going to be good, especially the pass rush is going to be very, very good. I think the running game, I think it's going to be a lot more of a pass offense. Losing Jalen Wright and Jabari Small, I think Dylan Sampson's going to be really good, but I think he's going to be really good out of the backfield, just catching balls and helping Nico settle in a little bit. I think you're going to see a lot more of a dynamic downfield, more of what we saw 2 years ago with Nico and Hendon versus what it was last year with Joe, and a lot of the side-to-side stuff. Like, you just didn't see the deep shots. You saw a lot of stuff close to the line of scrimmage. You saw a lot of RPO stuff, Joe ending up running a lot later. But I think by and large, I mean, he just deserves the benefit of the doubt. Dylan Gabriel, Hendon Hooker, I mean, Joe still got 9 wins and did what he needed to do to get Tennessee close to a double-digit win season. Tennessee was up. We don't have to relitigate how close they were in certain big moments in 2023 anyway. But, like, you look at it, they don't really get upset. He's lost one home game in the last 2 years. Like, Heupel has lost one home game at Tennessee in the last 2 years. And I think he's protect his offense, and I'm always going to lean offense. And I think this is such an offense driven sport now that when you have the best mind, you can lose Alex Golish to USF, but you still have one of the best offensive minds in the sport. Kalen DeBoer can lose guys. Heupel can lose guys. Kirby can lose defensive minds like Dan Lanning, and the defense is still going to be great. It's important that you have those kind of coaches who, when you do get plucked, when you have success, the offense still hummed, you're still able to recruit at that level. I think Heupel and this group is going to be really good. Again, I think you're looking at a double-digit win season, and I think he's very much solidified in the top 10 after this year. That's just my anticipation.
And I think that'll go a long way in where he is in these rankings. But a couple guys that didn't make the top 10, like right off the bat, like Lincoln Riley, we haven't even mentioned his name yet. Riley, Lane Kiffin, Lance Leipold, James Franklin, Dave Doran. Like, I don't know that I have to have Heupel ahead of any of those guys. So I just think it's a crowded room. That like kind of 6-5 to like 15. It's very interchangeable. I think you could just have a lot of personal preference. Because like a guy like Dave Doran, you know, he's up there with Whittingham and Chris Kleiman. Like, it's hard. You're kind of projecting with guys like that. That, like, yeah, but if they were at a powerhouse, who knows what they could do? Like, they're just consistently Dave Doran. They're winning 8-9 games every single year at NC State. Like, it's, and that's saying something, because that's an achievement somewhere like that. But I would say I still got to put, you know, guys like Lincoln Riley and Lane Kiffin ahead of Josh Heupel. Like, you can't. What can Josh Heupel possibly point to that says he's better than Lincoln Riley?
Oh, I mean, the offense alone with what Heupel is doing. What do you mean?
The offense, Lincoln Riley. He's got like 4 Heisman Trophy winners.
Actually, no, here, I'm saying right now. I'm saying, what would you rather play in at the moment? Like, what looks better? What looks more sustainable and wins at a higher level right now in college football? It's Heupel. Heupel right now, his offense.
Has he won more than Riley? Riley was winning like 11, 12
games
every
year.
Or
the last 3 years? Yeah, I mean, Heupel's won just the last 2 years alone. He's won 20 games. Lincoln hasn't won more than
last year was Riley's worst year as a head coach.
Yeah, they would be surprised if Lincoln won more in the last 2 years. But it's also the other part of it. Guess there's more to it. Heupel hires better than Lincoln. Lincoln, it's taken forever to bring in a great defensive mind. I think one of the things that's going to help Lincoln this year is that Lincoln brought in Danton Lynn from UCLA. I think that's a great hire. And I think he's going to help a lot on that USC defense. But when you have just overlooked that side of the ball year over year and put so much stress and pressure on your elite quarterbacks and your offenses, I don't think you could place him ahead of Heupel right now, because Heupel understands that there's two sides of the ball. And Heupel hired Tim Banks, and Tim Banks has been a good DC at Tennessee. Like, I think Tennessee, Rodney Gardner as defensive line coach has been huge for them. You know, Gardner back in his Georgia days, like, he has prioritized the defense to an extent immediately when he got to Tennessee. I don't think Lincoln's done the same thing. So I think that's where you give the edge to Heupel over anything, is that he's built more of the complete staff than what Lincoln has done at USC and even really back at Oklahoma.
Yeah, I'll give you that. But I think with Riley's track record, I mean, he's been to college ball playoffs, like won conference championships. Like, obviously, Heupel's playing in a better conference than the Big 12 ever was. But I don't know. I got to give the nod to Riley over Heupel.
That's fair. Final thing here. I have Mike Norvell at number 4. People are probably like screaming. There's Noles fans like, what are we doing? I have a lot of Noles fans in my family who are like, how has Mike Norvell not come up in the last hour on this show? I have Mike Norvell at number 4. You have Mike Norvell at number what? 10?
10.
I don't know how. Like, he was the other rumored guy that Alabama targeted outside of Kalen DeBoer. He should have been in the college football playoff this past year. It's someone you also look at, you're like, he has had a lot of success wherever he's gone, Memphis, this, that, and the other. Norvell, 23-4 his last two seasons. We were talking about who has the most like Kirby-ish potential. What Florida State's done in the recruiting trail, the way they have lit up the portal and have been elite in that regard, I think there's some Kirby-ish to Mike Norvell and what he's building in Tallahassee, recruiting those same kind of guys, same kind of toughness, hiring really well on both sides of the ball, valuing players.
Not same kind of toughness. They didn't care about that bowl game. Built different.
I would have loved to see those two teams at full strength go at it this past year. That would have a lot of fun. I think there was a lot of NFL firepower on both sides. And I think that's a shame that we didn't get a full look at those two squads, because I think it would have been a lot of fun. But I think Norvell is somewhere in the top 5, because I think we're going to look at this Florida State team. It's going to be kind of a down year. We talked about it. I'm not the biggest DJ Uiagalelei guy. I think they're probably looking at like a 9-3 type year, step back year. But I think he's building the best juggernaut that he can build in within the parameters of the current ACC. But I think Mike Norvell is one of those guys. I think he's grown into maybe what Dan Lanning can be at Oregon. But Norvell, I mean, quietly had to resurrect a Florida State program that was sneakily just kind of in disarray, and has built them back up over the years that people forget what Florida State was before he took it over and built them back up into the national juggernaut that they are. I don't know, Mike Norvell, I just think he's one of the 5 best coaches right now that in 2024 with the new age and how he builds his program. I think Mike Norvell has to be in my top 5.
And you kind of alluded to it, what I was about to push back on. Like, Lanning is someone I might throw in there being kind of Kirby-ish. Like, in terms of, like, because if you're throwing out Kirby's name, like, you have to be a great recruiter. And, like, Norvell's a good recruiter. The portal, acquiring talent, is the name of the game. So that's like, the hidden number in the recruiting rankings, right? Mm. But, like, in terms of just high school recruiting, Florida State still needs to step it up big time. Like, he's yet to have a top 10 class in terms of just what he's brought from high school. So obviously the portal, there's a balance there, and he's brought in,
I mean, he's been
talent.
The best portal recruiter in the sport,
and that's huge. But I think the more sustainable model is recruiting from the high school level and hitting the portal where you need to hit fill in key spots here and there. But you know, I think it's just a quote-unquote meaningless bowl game, so you know, maybe that's not a big deal for guys to sit out a game like that doesn't matter. But I feel like that definitely shows the downside of recruiting just straight out of the portal, like making that such a big thing you do, because it's different about the culture. Like, these guys didn't come here straight out of high school. They came here because whatever happened at their previous spot, this is the best chance to play big time college football and get to the NFL. Once they've done that after their 12 games, they've served their time, right? Like they don't need to prove anything else. And I think that's kind of what the bowl game said. Like it's not an indictment on their culture as a program or their, you know, their 2023 season, but I think it does say something about, you know, 63-3. Like it's one thing to get blown out. It's another thing to lose by 60 points. So I think, you know, if it's more sustainable getting guys out of high school, I think that's an area where Norvell could definitely improve. But yeah, he's obviously hitting up the portal, and that's a huge part about being a college football coach in 2024.
I love it. Well, I think we hit a lot here, Matt Green.
We did. I know we had some superlatives we couldn't get to.
We kind of talked about it, like most likely to join Kyle Whittingham. Most overrated right now is I think we said most underrated maybe is Brian Kelly, just because of what he's done.
Not at number two. He's not underrated on our list.
Yeah. But I think that was more for the masses, not on our list. Yeah.
No, that's probably true. James Franklin, if people have him down at 14 like we do, he might be on the underrated side. Or I had him at 14. I kept going past 10. But yeah, I think Lane Kiffin, I think 2024 is a huge year for Lane Kiffin. And I think if the stars really do align and they win the SEC somehow, some way, like Ole Miss has never even played for an SEC championship since the game started in 92, right? So if they were to play for the SEC championship, he's going into the top 10, maybe even flirting with that top five. But if they were to win the SEC, who knows, get a top eight, make a run into the playoff, something like that. I think Lane Kiffin is a coach that could really work his way up there.
I don't disagree. I think Lane Kiffin can absolutely be somewhere in that top 5 to 7 range, depending on how this year goes. For him, and I think the sky's the limit. I think Ole Miss can be really good. Well, that's all I've got, Matt Green.
We didn't even touch on your top 10. Hold on. We didn't even touch on your 10th one. Kirk Ferentz, you just tried to sneak him in here at 10. What are we doing? You don't really believe that.
Hold on. He's most likely to fall out, but Kirk Ferentz is absolutely a top 10 coach in the sport right now. He won 10 games again this
past
year.
He's had the worst offense in all of college football.
And he still won the Big Ten West and won 10 games.
Imagine if they had the 70th ranked offense, though. They could have won the Big Ten.
Dallas Clark. He puts dudes in the NFL. He has a style.
Looking back to Dallas Clark? What is that, 2003?
What we're talking about here is the man puts in Agent Espinoza. He brings in dudes. He develops.
Drew Tate.
He's won the Big Ten West twice in the last 4 years. He has won at least 10 games 4 times in the last 9 years. Talent disadvantage more often than not. NFL guys everywhere. Kirk Ferentz is absolutely one of the 10 best coaches in college
football right
now.
Do they have a talent disadvantage more times than not?
Yes, 100%.
When they play Michigan and Ohio State and Penn State, they do, but they don't beat those teams. Like, they probably have just as good or better talent than Minnesota and Northwestern. And
I'm just saying, there's not a lot of in-state talent in the state of Iowa. You have to be creative to win 10 games a lot at Iowa. You have to be really good at your job to be consistently good at Iowa, as Kirk Ferentz has been. Kirk Ferentz is absolutely a top 10 coach. Until he retires, he is a top 10 coach in the sport. What are we doing
here? I just
here?
Want you to know, you thought he was the 22nd ranked coach going into 2023, and then they have
10 games again with
offense.
A terrible offense. He
but
just won 10 games.
He's the head coach. It's year 20. They should have a good head coach. They should have a good offense by now.
He wants to make it hard. He challenges himself. He wants to make it more difficult. He's playing chess. We're playing checkers. No, he's playing chess. We're playing checkers, Matt Green. Shout out to Kirk Ferentz forever. Matt Green, always a pleasure, and I'll talk to you next week.
Yes, sir.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.